Hi, my name is Corinne. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, and I am in recovery for drug addiction, alcohol abuse, codependency, boundary issues, and approval seeking. Hi. I was born in small town Oregon to a young couple that absolutely adored me. My dad worked in the mill, and when he wasn't working, he frequently was out hunting or fishing. I went everywhere with my mom. We were very close, and it was usually just the two of us, and I relished being the center of attention at a young age. I was the only child, niece, and grandchild, and I was blessed with activities such as acting lessons, going to the theater, and ballet at a very young age, and I enjoyed it all very much. When I was 5, another member of our little family was joined. My brother was born, and everyone was joyful. Everyone, that is, except for me. I was being forced to share my spotlight with someone else, and I was not keen on this idea at all. I took the birth of my brother very hard, and I took it personally with my mother, and I began to be cruel to her and push her away. There are a few things that I do remember about my childhood, although the majority of my memories take place at three places: home, the beach, and church. My mom was frequently doing something at the church, and since my brother and I were always with her, we spent much time there as well. I remember being interested in the Bible and feeling the love of Christ in my life at a young age. I attended a Christian school for a few years and always went to summer camp with my church as well. I was baptized by my request at the age of 7. At the age of 8, my parents divorced, which was confusing and hard on me as it is on most kids. I still dreamt of my parents getting back together, how wonderful life could be if everything had just returned to its old way, but it did not. My father moved to the Carolinas for a job promotion. I spent about a year despising him for choosing money over me. Even though he was still in contact with me, I felt unworthy, unimportant, and abandoned by him. When I was 13, I decided to move to North Carolina to live with my dad and his girlfriend. My confused and young mind saw it as an opportunity to gain my dad's approval and become the center of attention, since I would be the only child in the house because my brother stayed in Oregon with my mom. North Carolina was very different from Salem, Oregon. I was the girl that was different. I talked different, dressed different. I lived with my dad and his girlfriend, which wasn't looked highly upon in the Bible Belt. I had always been well-liked, received good grades, was active in theater, choir, and volleyball. All of this stayed true when I moved to North Carolina. Well, all except the whole being well-liked thing. I was the West Coast girl. I had never experienced bullying before, and I was happy that it was short-lived. I learned to become what people liked to be around so that I could be accepted into the crowd. I began to feel more lost and out of place than I ever had. When I moved, I turned away from my mom, becoming my father's puppet to manipulate, and I had neither the strength nor the clue how to set boundaries with him, which continued to be a problem for many years to come. I always aimed to please, and any disappointment had in me would crush me. I tried to be his favorite. I stopped going to church after my move. My father had turned from the church and began to make a mockery of the whole idea of Jesus. I followed suit, turning away from my holy father. In high school, I was the girl that you wanted your daughter to be friends with. I was the lead in the school play. I played sports, was involved in different school clubs. I received good grades and even ended up graduating a semester early to attend the University of North Carolina at Asheville. I had learned the art of putting on face that people wanted to see. When there were no parents around, I was the girl that everyone wanted at their party. I could drink the boys under the table and still take care of my drunken friends. I was the first to get everybody to go skinny dipping, dance on tables, or whatever else seemed fun and crazy to me at the time. My dad was frequently out of town on business, and so as long as I was getting good grades, was in good shape, and was being what he considered safe about my choices, he didn't really mind my drinking or having sex with my boyfriend. Toward the end of high school, I was a regular at the weekend party, getting drunk and getting all the attention I craved. It was not out of the ordinary for me to drink half a bottle of liquor myself over an evening at the age of 17. I was kind of seen as the anti-drug girl, though, frequently being told that I shouldn't down something that I had not tried. I always replied with a story of my uncle, who had been in and out of recovery his whole life, and how it had caused him to lose his home, wife, kids, job, and most recently, his health. One night at a party, I had a raging headache from drinking too much, and I went into a bathroom to find something to take for it. When I walked in, a couple of people that I knew were standing around visiting. I asked them if anyone had anything to help with my headache, and I was handed a white pill that I was told was an aspirin. I took what I was given, and I quickly learned that it was not aspirin, but ecstasy. Instead of thinking about what a horrible experience it was and continuing on my drug-free path, it instead opened the door to experimenting with drugs to mask the person I was. I used drugs as another way to forget my bad day, how much I hated the way I looked, The fact that I had been restricting food for years, and because I enjoyed the inner circle effect that it had on my relationships with people. Through college, I played with marijuana, mushrooms, ecstasy, Special K, opium, Xanax, and was introduced to cocaine. I drank heavily on a regular basis and even got alcohol poisoning a couple of times. One night, my roommates left me in a room with two guys and two bottles of tequila, and when they found me, both bottles were empty. I was passed out on the floor with my clothing out of place, and the two guys were gone. I have no recollection of the events of that night, only that my body hurt and I had a hangover for days. No one took me to the hospital out of fear that I would get in trouble for underage drinking. I felt that my friends didn't care enough to take care of me, and I was angry at them for not coming back to get me in the 30 minutes like they had promised. I began not to trust girls and people in general. I started going to an underground club and dancing the night away while high a couple of nights a month to immerse myself in the world where I felt that I was in a group of exclusive friends. We had secrets together. I was so lost, always feeling alone and empty, looking for something to fill my broken heart with. My uncle died around this time from complications from his addiction. Helping to prepare things for his funeral made the cost of addiction real to me and scared me straight, but only for a year or so. Thankfully, I was able to graduate from college. My GPA was nothing to boast about, but during this time, I did graduate. Now that college was out of the way, I could really have some fun. I had no responsibilities. I slept half the day away, went to work in the afternoon bartending, and headed out most nights with a bottle of vodka, a bag of Coke, and my so-called friends. By the grace of God, I made it through each evening, not only alive, but without getting a DUI. When I was 25, I finally decided to throw in the towel on my on-and-off-again, verbally abusive relationship with my alcoholic high school sweetheart. He was against my drug use, but he was a big drinker, and we split ways on bad terms. I quickly jumped into the arms of the next guy. He told me everything I needed to hear and gave me everything I wanted. Although everyone told me he was bad news, I insisted on falling for the falsely person that he was selling to me, along with the coke and booze that he made readily available to me. I believed every bit of the false hope that he fed me, and he quickly convinced me that he was not who he seemed, that was all bad news that I heard of him, was in his past, and that he was on the up and up, and I fell for it hard. He quickly tried to convince me that I should get pregnant and start a life with him. The honeymoon period was intense, and I followed every compliment and affirmation he fed me, wanting more. He made me feel loved and accepted, beautiful and smart, but in the back of my mind, I knew that things just did not seem right with him, but I ignored it. One day, we received a call from DHS saying that his two children from a previous relationship were being placed in our custody and out of their mother's care. As we were preparing to add two children to our home, we decided to go out and party one last time before our life changed. That night, everything that I drank tasted disgusting, so I didn't drink much. My boyfriend did his usual half bottle of whiskey. When we got home that night, I was bound and raped by him repeatedly. When I woke that morning, there was a pregnancy test on the bathroom counter that he had left for me to take. My heart was racing. Please don't let me be pregnant with this monster's child. When it came up positive, he wrapped his arms around me and proclaimed his excitement that we were going to have a baby and we'd always be together. I died a little inside. What had I done and where was my life going? I felt dirty, used, and trapped. How can I carry a baby to this man that had just raped me? How do I know if it will continue or get worse? As I did throughout many times in my life, I did it again and felt defeated alone. Loneliness seemed to have plagued me and my empty heart. Although I was unsure if I wanted to be a mother, there was no way that he would even discuss our options with pregnancy. We were to be a happy family, and I may as well embrace myself for the crazy ride ahead of me. I'm very thankful that through my pregnancy, God removed the urge to drink and to use drugs. The further along I was in my pregnancy, the more I fell in love with the idea of the amazing life that was growing inside me, and the worse the abuse from my fiancé got. But I was carrying his child, so I figured it best to get married and try to make it work. When I was 5 months pregnant, we were wed, and the day after our wedding, while in our honeymoon suite, my new husband again wrapped his arms around me. This time he said, "Now that we're married, the only way out of this is in a box. I just want you to know that." The implication being I could only escape this marriage by leaving him dead and in a coffin. This was not a fairy tale, but a nightmare wedding. After the wedding, he was rarely around to help me raise his two kids. Always returned home drunk from nights at the strip club and who knows what else. If I didn't tend to his needs when he was in this state of mind, he would yell, punch holes in the wall, flip over furniture, and on occasion he would rape me. I was scared of him. When my daughter was born, I was hoping that her being there would change his ways and our great family life that we had promised would begin. During the delivery of her, he left and went to the bar. When he returned, he slept on the floor of the delivery room while my mom stood by my bed and helped me through 2 days of labor. Hours after she came into this world, I was instructed to hide by pain meds that my nurse had brought to me and save them for my husband. I felt wronged and tossed aside, but I didn't feel alone anymore. I had the most precious gift in my arms, my daughter. My world began to revolve around her. I daydreamed of leaving him and having an amazing life with my daughter, just the two of us. A few months after she was born, I injured myself and was given pain medication. I found that the pain pills made the mistreatment and self-hatred for the world that I had brought my daughter into more bearable. I found the pain meds were a huge issue for my husband. He had been hiding it from me until now, but since he saw that I enjoyed them so much, he may as well let the cat out of the bag. Things were about to spiral out of control quickly. I found comfort and escape from the unhappy life that I was living with in these pills. My husband suggested that the 20 or so Vicodin that we were getting wasn't enough, and he had heard of the perfect place to go and get what we really needed. I remember how disgusting and out of place, not to mention how terrified I felt when I walked into the biggest pill mill in South Florida. I was spoken to in an abrasive and degrading manner by the staff. I didn't fit the part, though. I looked polished, educated, and foreign among the 200 or so dope-sick people in the waiting areas of this clinic that were being herded from here to there like cattle from the bouncer-looking security guards. Because of the look that I had and the grooming of words to use by that my husband had taught me, I successfully received a large script of high milligram pills that were about to get a hold on me like nothing ever had. And me being naive to the world of pills, I had no clue just how bad and how quickly I was about to get hooked. I was physically and mentally addicted, and we'd be dope sick daily if I didn't have my fix. I tried quitting on my own after being at wit's end with mental consumption of planning out my next score every day. It usually wouldn't last more than 3 days because I would become violently ill without my fix. My husband had stopped working, and I was the sole provider for a family of five and two habits of $20 to $80 a day. I began using all the money I made bartending to support our habits, sparing little for rent and bills, frequently seeking help from family members to pay my way. The money I was given would pay bills. My money would pay pills. Over the 8 months, I tried to quit sometimes daily, but I tried really hard 4 times. Every day was filled with lies to help me get money together for my next score. The only things that mattered to me were my daughter and pills. I was blind to the lying, stealing, and destruction that I was bringing to those around me. I was ready to be freed from this whirlwind, so I did what had worked for me in the past. I ran. I decided to pack up my family and move back to Oregon. No more drugs, new state, good family support. I had it all planned out. I could do this alone. I left my mother 13 years earlier to live with my father, and now her and her new husband were opening their home to us. The secret that I bared was beyond belief, and I did not have the strength or clarity to share it with anyone in my family, especially my mom, who had become a counselor in the field of addictions. Here I was about to show up on her doorstep, an addict. There were so many days that I wanted to cry and tell her all I was going through, the drugs, the lying, cheating, and the abuse I was enduring. I felt like a broken, hollow shell of a person. Whenever I spoke of exposing my addiction, my husband told me that if anyone found out how bad things were, that my daughter would be taken away from me for being an unfit parent, and this alone was my greatest fear. Without her, I would have no reason to live, even though at the time my addiction was nothing resembling living, but instead dying a little each day. I did not stay clean after my move. It was no time before I found a doctor to fool into giving me what I wanted. Although it was not enough to fuel my addiction, I relied on my husband to find the drugs I needed. My marriage continued to be plagued by mistreatment, emotional, verbal, sexual, and financial abuse. I was too afraid to leave. I thought he would hurt me and our daughter. It was at the point that I woke daily wanting to die because of my addiction and my relationship. When I mentioned that I wanted to quit using pills, he would try to coax me back into it verbally, and if that didn't work, he would literally force feed pills to me. I realized later that this was a way for me to keep him around. If I was active in my addiction, then I couldn't leave him, for he was my main supplier. Without his help, I would be dope sick, and my cover would be blown. With the support of my family, I finally gained the courage to file for a divorce. Needless to say, my husband was furious and found what he thought would be something so horrible and upsetting to me, a way to get back at me. It backfired. And although it was one of the scariest moments and most painful moments of my life, I am now forever grateful. He sat down with my mom and stepdad and told them about my drug problem. He thought that he was destroying me, and that night, I felt the same way. But really, he began the start of my new blessed life. That week, he and my two darling stepchildren moved back to North Carolina. I detoxed. I cried tears of fear, hurt, anger, and relief as my world came crashing down around me. I found a counselor, and I was taken to Celebrate Recovery that very week. I was mortified. I was so full of shame, and this continued to be a hard area for me to work through. I was hurting, alone, and confused when I came to CR. My first night, the speaker talked of a step study that had just started, and I felt that I needed all the help I could get at this point because the only thing that was keeping me going was my daughter, and I needed to step up and be the mother that she deserved. There had to be more to life than being a lost and wounded soul aimlessly wandering through life. Step study was the hard force of realization that I needed. Learning to trust and speak my heart openly to a group of women was painfully stitching my heart and soul back together. The first few weeks, I still felt a wall of bitterness and anger that just wouldn't break down. About a month and a half into my recovery, I attended my church's women's retreat. The last night, we encouraged to write down what we needed to be freed from and pin it to a cross so it was at this stage. In this moment, I finally made the choice to surrender my addiction and all the negativity that came with it over to him and embrace his never-ending love and grace. After this act of nailing my sins to the cross, the walls began to crumble, and things that I was working on in step study became easier to focus on. My shame, attention-seeking behaviors, my need to be accepted, and my need to control slowly but surely were handed over to the Lord's care and control. The more I released and the more I trusted, the easier it was. Jesus turned, and when he saw her, he said, "Daughter, be encouraged. Your faith has made you well." And the woman was healed at that very moment, Matthew 9:22. My love for the Lord has returned as it was when I was a small child, for he alone is my comforter. The support and accountability that I received from my CR family and my parents were not always what I wanted at the time, but they were always what I needed. I was retaught the love of Jesus, and I felt his grace in abundance. Within a week of celebrating 1 year of sobriety, my best friend, my mom, baptized me. On Mother's Day, I dedicated my own personal angel on earth, also known as my daughter, to Christ's care and control. I stand before you all 4 years and 1 month after God set me free from the chains of addiction and my destructive ways. The encouragement and growth in self that my friends, family, and this program have offered me has changed me in many, many ways. I am finally using my college degree, and I have a professional career in which I am advancing in. Thank you, Jesus. I also have a newfound desire to take care of my body. I pay attention to the things that I put into my body now. I choose healthy foods and healthy activities. Over the past year, I've lost over 55 pounds, and this summer I began running. I feel great. I did not know that a day would come that I could say that I am not physically uncomfortable, and if someone told me that I'd be signing up for obstacle course races, I would have laughed. Today, I choose to be a good role model for my daughter in multiple areas of life. My heart would be broken still if it weren't for the people in this room. This is the place that helped me along the joyous yet painful road to recovery. On the hard days, I like to remember a quote that I heard early on in my recovery. I could have the pain of discipline today, or I could have the pain of regret tomorrow. I could have the pain of progress today, or the pain of stagnation for a lifetime. My ability to build relationships with people has taken on new life. I have real bonds with people now, friendships that are lasting and meaningful. There are people in this room that have gone out of their way to help me along my journey. And there are those of you that have helped save me from heartache and danger. And I thank you sincerely for your acts of love and kindness. Accountability partners are so important in the process of recovery. Get a phone number from someone tonight. Pray about finding a sponsor, one that will speak into your life and help you continue to grow, no matter what stage of life you are in. Growing and moving forward can seem scary and sometimes impossible, but it is possible. All things are possible. Fear has two meanings. Forget everything and run. That was my old thinking. I don't want to feel or face anything. Now I try to remember, face everything and rise. I am not who I was, and I choose to never be that person again. To the newcomer, do not let life pass you by. Live a life of love, joy, and purpose. Stop hiding. You have found a safe place to let your light shine. Even if now it is merely a dull glow, with time you will become a starlight of glory and God's abounding love. He has a place for all of the hurting children in this world. In Jeremiah 29:11, it says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." Thanks for letting me share.